The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
If you've been reading the news this week, there was a lot of conversation about grandparents dying for the sake of the economy. Have you followed along?
A little bit of that, yeah.
I mean, it's a weird
twist. It is
right?
A weird thing that people are talking about.
Right. So what is the worth of life? And should we sacrifice the older generation for the sake of a dollar? I mean,
that's a preposterous. I can't stand arguments like that because they're so ridiculous that I think they reveal more about the vacancy of our mental processes than they ever get us to anything useful.
Jerry Boyer is with us. Jerry's a regular guest on our show. Jerry is editor of Town Hall Finance. Jerry, how are things with you and your family?
Things are great with us. How are things with you two and your family?
We're strong. All of us are strong and healthy here. Thanks for asking.
Good. But I agree with what Kathy just said, that this is really revealing that maybe our mental processes and underneath them our spiritual processes aren't exactly healthy.
Right.
That at roughly 7 days into a quarantine,
right,
we're starting to, you know, wonder just how economically productive grandma is.
Right.
There's something off with the culture.
Right.
That, I mean, I'm not saying that there never are lifeboat scenarios in the world. There are, and there's trolley problems, and there's moral philosophers who spend time running those. But, you know, it's a little premature and a little unwise and a little horrifying.
Is it ever? Yeah. So, Jerry, can you sort of sketch the scenario of how this came to be? This was first generated by the lieutenant governor of Louisiana. Is that right?
I don't know who was patient zero on the, is grandma paying her own way?
Yeah.
I've seen it bubbling up from the grassroots. Mostly, sadly, grassroots conservatives, that's my tribe, saying, we're going to commit economic suicide and shut down forever. I mean, you know, people die. They do it all the time. And only this many people died of coronavirus. And this is, you know, it's 1/100 of the number of people who die in flu. There's a lot of dodgy math floating around. And I saw that kind of, you know, bubble up a little bit. Then there was, you know, something from the lieutenant governor of Louisiana. And then there was a senator who was on Tucker's show. And then Brit Hume, who I love dearly, but what was he thinking? You know, said something that kind of verged on this. The Wall Street Journal editorial board, to my great chagrin, I know a lot of those people. I've been on that page, started to talk that way almost a week ago about a great nation can't shut down for long. And, you know, a little bit of this kind of death panel kind of thinking.
Right.
And it's really shocking because, I mean, we conservatives were like really worried about death panels under Obamacare.
Right.
And we had reason to be. You do tend to get death panels when you have national, you know, health care. And so we were, you know, right to be concerned about that. But now the same tribe that was scaring us, the Glenn Becks of the world, who were scaring us about death panels, seem to be wanting to form little internet or online or radio kind of pickup games of death panel to start to talk about who do we really need and what death levels are acceptable as a trade-off to GDP. It's a really toxic discussion. It's a really toxic way of looking at the world, and it is completely alien to the way a biblical worldview would approach these issues.
A biblical worldview, though, Jerry, doesn't devalue something like GDP and certainly doesn't devalue human life. So if both of those things are considered as important in a Christian worldview, what happens when it seems like there are moments when you have to choose? Or is that the false equivalence?
You just said it, asked and answered. What happens when it seems like you have to choose?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So not to sound like hyper-spiritual here or whatever, but that's kind of like that's the devil's conversation. He likes conversations where we think that God is stingy and that God is cruel and that life is made up of bad choices where we play one off against one another. That's never the way the Bible approaches issues like this. The Bible approaches issues saying, I mean, the basic structure, you look at the Torah, for example, there are quarantine rules in the Torah. Right. There's dealing with lepers. There's dealing with disease conditions. There's dealing with sewage, et cetera. Now, it kind of looks bad for GDP to tear down a leper's house. And yet God says, if you follow all of my commandments and all of my laws and all of my precepts and all of my judgments, you will prosper and live long. God never plays those things off against one another, and we shouldn't either. The God conversation is, how do we act wisely and decrease the number of trade-off, scarcity, so hard to make grandma or making a living kinds of decisions? And you just shift the whole conversation not to how do we make things less horrible in a world that's getting more horrible, but rather how do we redeem the whole situation? And we do it by stopping this trading off of goods against one another. Again, that's what the devil does. He takes one good and makes it the enemy of another good, whereas God never does that. He never says, I want you to choose this good over that other good. God always says there is a good way of living. In the Hebrew Bible, it's called shalom. It's everything as it should be, everything right and prospering together. And then there's a bad way of living, which is the way of death and poverty. The good way of living is the way of life and prosperity. And we've gotten ourselves stuck in a life versus prosperity dilemma, which is just not the way to look at this at all.
Right. So as I heard this conversation unfold this week, Jerry, I started thinking back to Dickens' A Christmas Carol, where Ebenezer Scrooge famously talked about decreasing the surface population. So, you know, this conversation, as you rightly pointed out, has been part of the Torah or part of popular culture for thousands of years.
Yeah, and you look at that moment when that's written, you know, that was at the beginning of a time when Western civilization implementing biblical ideas was about to do two things. It was about to vastly increase the lifespan of humanity and the lifespan of babies, because they had a serious problem with premature death and with infant death. They were about to vastly increase human life, and they were also about to vastly increase human prosperity, because those things go together. We embrace the biblical principles and really, in many ways, a Hebraic, a Torah-type point of view. And what did we get? We didn't get money but death, and we didn't get life but poverty. We got both, because that's right. The shalom that comes. And Dickens was right to put that foolishness into the mouth of Ebenezer Scrooge. It was Malthus's mouth that originally came out of. And he was right to show us that you can have both at the same time.
Hmm. Jerry,
in fact, you almost can't have both. You know, they have to go together. Places that, I'm sorry, I know you started to say something.
No, just please,
one other thing I want to get off my chest. The former Vice President Joe Biden, not only to do political here, said, but we should not lose one life in order to add one more point to the Dow. Well, yeah, of course we shouldn't. But that's never been the decision. The places in the world where life is cheap are the places in the world where the stock market is cheap, too. The places in the world that value human life for the most part are the places that also have high levels of wealth, high GDP output, high levels of productivity, and have high levels of the stock market. It's a human flourishing thing, and it all fits together.
Okay, Jerry, I'm with you on everything you're saying. I think it's interesting, however, that goes against what I think – I'm thinking of the Christians that I know who are living a devout, committed Christian life. I think oftentimes they're thinking that they have to make a choice between money and the good, that whatever things have to do with money or financial resources of any kind are somehow they're maybe too alluring, or they're too much of a temptation, and so they have to be avoided at all cost, or they have to be minimized.
Yeah, well, they are alluring, and even Jesus talks about the deceitfulness of money. I'm not going to deny that, but Jesus probably talks more about the deceitfulness of religious status. So I know a lot of people who say, oh, money, you know, they're very suspicious of wealth, and they're suspicious of people who have high income. but they are completely honed in on and to some degree addicted to church status and spiritual status. They're very proud of how they don't make a lot of money, and they're very proud of how religiously rigorous they are as opposed to money. So any good thing can become a temptation. I mean, you know, Jesus warns us about honoring father and mother too much if we don't follow him and we follow the old ways. So there's no good that can't become an idol. But what we tend to do is we're like hypersensitive to other people's idols and not to our own. So there is a kind of Christian who's really proud of being poor and really suspicious of people who aren't, but they've got their own idols, like the idols of religious status. So they're not free from it. None of us are. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God.
So, Jerry, as you joined us, you talked about our tribe, the tribe that we are part of, you know, conservative Christians for the most part, right?
Yes.
And that kickback, that blowback from when people are talking about, well, what do we do with grandma? Well, we've been rightly criticized because people have been saying, well, of course, you know, you're the party of pro-life. You're the pro-life party. Babies, yes, but the elderly, no. So, you know, we're going to take care of the babies. We're all about not having abortions in this country. But what about, you know, when people get older? Well, we're ready to just throw them under the bus because times are getting hard.
Yeah, but it wasn't more than like 15 minutes ago before we were babies and old people.
Yeah,
we were
warning
about euthanasia, and now we're like, oh, GDP is going to go negative? Ah, well, it's only people over 80 with pre-existing conditions who die from this. Yes. It's people over 80 with pre-existing conditions. There are a fair number of people over 80, and they almost all have pre-existing conditions. And that's exactly what the death panel people were saying.
Right.
Quality of life versus quantity of life. And does it really make sense to impoverish our children, you know, for somebody who's not going to live that long anyway? So we sound exactly like our opponents. And that's sad.
It's
and
atrocious.
It's revelatory.
It really is.
I got to be honest, guys. When I read this stuff, it makes me like a little like physically sick to my stomach.
Yeah. I get that. It's a hard cringe.
I get a little like a dizzy thing and a little sickness in the pit of my stomach and think, you know, if this is what happens when the wood is wet, what will happen when it's dry? I mean, we've had is this day 11 of the quarantine?
That's what we were just talking
John's
about.
John's keeping track. I'm not.
I believe it is. I mean, I would say the quarantine for me was starting last Monday, right?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds about right. Yeah. Okay. So we're less than 2 weeks into the quarantine.
Exactly.
And we're already starting to, like, when I was a kid, I remember there was this, I think it was Bugs Bunny or something. They're in a lifeboat, right? And, you know, I think Bugs is looking at the Daffy Duck or something like that, and he starts to look like a cooked chicken or something.
I remember
like
this,
that.
Yes.
We're already starting to look at one another and say, you know, it's pretty horrible.
Sure is.
But here's the grace of it. Now we know. You know, we now know where we are, so now we know what to start repenting of. If it's not revealed, then we don't really know how much we've gotten caught up in a fear mindset and a scarcity mindset and a groupthink mindset and a whatever the mass media says must be wrong mindset and the idolatry of GDP. Look, I'm an economist. I love GDP growth. It's a wonderful thing. But, you know, we can lose a couple of quarters of GDP and to take reasonable precautions about the elderly. We don't have to sacrifice them on the altar of a number. We can come back out of this sprinting. This isn't destroying infrastructure. This is not destroying our fundamental economy. We won't forget how to run the machines. We won't forget how to run the cash registers if we're off for a month and a half. We can come back and, you know, a large proportion of that GDP will be made up in a couple of makeup quarters.
So,
we don't have to choose between prosperity and dignity of human life.
Well, then, Jer, in some ways, was this, you know, death panel, the rise of that this past week, was that echoing President Trump? Because, you know, President Trump this past week said, well, the churches are going to be full on Easter Sunday. And of course, everyone's saying, well, that's far too soon. Easter's, you know, 3 weeks away. Not, you know, it's less than that. It seems like we're just pushing this and we're afraid of the suffering that is at hand.
Yeah, well, we're echoing President Trump, absolutely. And he's also sort of echoing us, right? Because he has a Twitter account and he reads and he watches Fox News and he listens to talk radio. So I don't know who started it. But let's start to end it now. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. It is shameful.
It is
evil. And, you know, next year we will be embarrassed and ashamed at how we acted in this moment unless we pivot now. There is room in American economic production to take a quarantine. Ancient civilizations that lived hand to mouth could handle quarantine. You read quarantines in the Bible. There are quarantines in the history of Rome. Poor villages with subsistence economies got through quarantines. The greatest economy in the history of the world can handle a quarantine and protect its 85-year-olds with diabetes quite easily.
Thank you, Jerry. So, false equivalents. Let's talk about the story of Solomon, the two women, and the baby. You wrote about that a little bit yesterday. Give me your perspective. First of all, tell the story.
Before that, can I just say something to you, too?
Please.
Yes.
I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes because I don't know about you, but sometimes I look at the conversation in the world and I feel alone.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, the world has the whole world gone crazy.
Yes,
yep.
100%.
And what I'm seeing is that no, there are a lot of people who haven't. I was on with a different station, same company, this morning, and I heard the same thing. So the people with the megaphones in front of megaphones in front of megaphones are out there saying horrible things. But what I see is that there are just so many people who are stepping back from that and saying, "Wait a minute." Maybe I was with you before, maybe you were my favorite host or my favorite author, but I'm not with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to let people who are listening, because a lot of people are over 70, you know, who listen
sure.
to Christian radio, right? And a lot of people are like, wait, that's me. You know, I thought we were on the same side, and now you're talking
right.
about sacrificing me. And there are a lot of younger people who love their parents and love their grandparents and love the dignity and love human dignity. And they're sad and sick too, and you're not alone. And talking to you guys is just a reminder to me that I'm not alone either. My and my family and my friends, we're not alone. There really are people who see what's wrong with what's been going on.
That's
here.
Really good, Jerry. Thank you
yep.
for that, because I'm the same way. Because, you know, if you sit down, and I don't know about you, but I try to choose my media carefully, especially now. So when I go home in the evening, I don't want to engage in cable television, but it's the guys with the biggest megaphones who are driving us down to some, you know, room of despair.
If I hear one more person's hot take, I could, like,
but don't you do know, you God. Do know this is true, just from being in your circles of believers, that there are many millions and millions and millions of people in this country right now who love Jesus and who know the truth and want good for all of mankind.
They do, and they don't want to sacrifice human life to economic prosperity, and they're also wise enough to know that you don't have to sacrifice human life for prosperity.
Yeah.
That if we obey God and act wisely and be prudential, we can have both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is the devil who wants us to be thinking about which one of those we love more, because it turns them into dueling idols. When if we worship God and obey him, we can have a prosperous society that respects human dignity. In fact, that's what Western civilization, the rise of Western civilization is when we stopped making those trade-offs. And we started to say, well, because the story before was, in order to have prosperity, you have to have slavery. That's what the whole pagan world believed that,
right.
that you cannot
yes.
have universal human dignity
right.
and prosperity at the same time. And along come people with a Christian worldview, largely evangelicals, who said, no. You can have both. You can have free human beings who aren't treated as property, and you can have prosperity. In fact, you'll get more of both if you mm-hmm. do the right thing and act wisely. And we did.
And even if you don't see in your human knowledge or understanding how that prosperity will come, there is a step of faith that you take when you honor what God has given you, and you step out in that faith and you say, our obligation is to preserve human life, and we are going to do everything we can to do that while also believing that God is going to preserve the rest of society at the same time.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a story when David and his mighty men were out on a raid. The Amalekites came, I think. I haven't checked this, but the Amalekites came and kidnapped all the women and children. And it was a horrible thing, and the men wanted to kill David over it. And they gave chase, but they didn't know where to give chase to. And they found a man dying in the wilderness who had been a slave of the Amalekites, and he was sick. And because he was sick, the Amalekites said, no use to keeping him around. We'll just leave him to die. So they left him behind, dying in the wilderness, starving and dehydrating. And David's men, who were looking to rescue their wives and children, stopped and picked this man up, and they brought him back to life. And then you know what he did when he was well enough to speak? He said, oh, you know, you're the followers of David. You're the Israelites. I know where they took your wives and children.
How about that?
So are we the Amalekites, or are we?
Yeah. Are we gonna trust that if we do the right thing and follow God, that His provision is going to be there? Mm-hmm. And not only His provision, Jerry, but His wisdom and His knowledge is going to be there too.
When Hitler decided to demonize Jews and we were an open society, he had no idea he was driving the best physicists in the world across the Atlantic.
We
had no idea that we were attracting the best physicists in the world across the Atlantic. But we won World War II, and we basically started the atomic age because we had a basic Christian orientation, and Hitler had a pagan orientation. It wasn't a strategy. We didn't say, you know what, we'll accept Jews fleeing from Europe, you know, because maybe there's some smart ones who can run the Manhattan Project or whatever. Maybe we'll get an Albert Einstein. We didn't know what we were getting with those teeming masses, but we got some of the greatest minds in the world. And a society that's an open society that treats people with dignity will attack talent, and we don't know. It attracts a blessing, as you say, even a blessing we're not aware of in a cause and effect way if we do the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So is it just a first world problem? I mean, they're not talking about, you know, this in Africa, are they?
No, not much, because they're a more cohesive society, right? The elders are integrated into the society, whereas we've fallen into a generation versus generation kind of conflict. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there are some really toxic conversations going on among young people, you know, referring to the disease as boomer remover. Right. Now, that's not, I don't want to nitpick. There's a lot of young people who love their parents and love their grandparents. Right. But we have it. There's something about our culture has pitted older against younger. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think it's Malachi prophesies, and then it comes up in the Gospels. When the revival comes, he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. So part of what's going on is that we allowed a wedge to get between generations and didn't see intergenerational reconciliation as part of the gospel process. And now that's coming home to roost in a casual and cavalier attitude towards the life of the elderly.
Mm-hmm. There was this New York Times article that John and I talked about at the start of the show called The Case for Doing Nothing. It talked about the madness of busyness that has afflicted a lot of professionals, a lot of people in general in the West and particularly in America. And the writer of the article, Olda Mecking, said there's a way out of the madness. It's not more mindfulness exercise or a healthy diet. What I'm talking about is doing nothing, or as the Dutch call it, Nixon, N-I-K-S-E-N. So she goes on to present her case for the fact that sometimes during the day, unplugging and specifically not thinking about something is valuable. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you need clear spaces. Be still and know that I am God, right? Mm-hmm. Be still. That's King Jamesy. It's shut up and know that I am God, right? I think there's definitely a place for not fretting, not efforting. We just heard what the Dutch call it. I mean, you know, I think the Torah calls it Sabbath. There's a time for Sabbathing. I mean, if you look at the Tanakh, you look at the Old Testament, 1 year and seven, they do basically no work. And then 1 day and seven, they do no work. And then there's a whole bunch of other festivals on behalf of that. So it's definitely a society that had its tune down and turn down and tune out moments. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, oh, but we have to keep working because, you know, we'll boost our ancient Israelite equivalent of GDP. When you're living wisely, you can rest and work, and your rest helps you work better, and your work helps you rest better. They're not enemies of one another. And so, yeah, I think there really is an argument. And this is what we ought to be doing. We have an enforced Sabbath rest, so rest. I mean, if it goes an extra week or two or three, okay, it's a staycation. Really, rest, relax. I'm an economist. I'm telling you, we can handle this.
Yeah.
I mean, the ancient Israelites were a subsistence agricultural economy, and they could take off for a year. We can take off for a month. Really, honestly, we can, and we can afford it.
That is a really good point. All right, so Jerry, let me ask you. This is a personal question. I want to know, like, what you guys are watching or reading. I mean, how are you? You already work a lot from home, and you do a lot of idea generation and a lot of productivity. But when you're not being productive, what are you and Susan interested in watching?
Well, I mean, if you want to know what are we binge watching right now?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm asking.
It's going to sound funny. You ever hear of the Thin Man series,
oh,
the Dashiell
sure.
Hammett? Yeah, so it's Myrna Loy and was it William Powell?
Yes, William Powell.
Okay.
So Susan and I and our youngest daughter, Mercy, are binge-watching. We got it from our son, our oldest son, Chris, and his and our daughter-in-law, Courtney. So they own the boxed set. So just before the Great Plague came along, we didn't know it was coming, but I thought, you know, I'd like to watch The Thin Man again.
Yeah.
So they lent us the box set, and so we've been, you know, when we're not working, we've been binge-watching our way through this, I don't know, it's 1930s or 1940s
yeah, it's 30s.
Screwball comedy mystery called The Thin Man. And it's really nice and it's sweet, so that's what we've been doing.
Good.
That sounds really good.
Okay, what about, does music enter in, or are you watching old, you know, sports contests or books, or what else are you doing with your time?
Music is coming in big time.
Okay.
So we're kind of going back and forth between three playlists. One is what I call my fun playlist, which is a whole lot of Motown, stuff like that.
Good choice.
Then we have the classical, which is a lot of especially Baroque music. If it ain't Baroque, fix it. And also on Facebook, I said, hey, you know, I quoted from Ephesians, you know, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, giving thanks in all things. So I said, you know, give me links to your best worship music. And so there's, I don't know, maybe 100 of them. We haven't listened through all of them. It's all sorts of different styles. You got some Johnny Cash, you got some modern praise stuff, you've got some, you know, medieval chants. So just kind of listening our way. So those are our three playlists, and it's wonderful to come back, and I'm just loving the music, and it's so calm and comforting. And isn't it the right thing to do at a time
yes.
like this?
Yes, it is indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, Jerry, before we let you go though, because you know, you did say with great confidence, we can afford to do this 30 days. However, there are people talking about, you know, the Great Depression Part 2. I mean, is that on the table?
Well, I mean, if we do something really stupid politically, the Great Depression Part 1 was caused by political mistakes. There wasn't anything. I mean, we had a Dust Bowl, but, you know, that wasn't the driver of the Great Depression. It was unforced political errors. So let's say that we end this too early. Right. We end a pandemic early because we want to keep the GDP up. And then we get like a second pandemic on top of the other one. And people are afraid to go out. And the thing grows really fast and the hospitals are overrun. Let's say we take a political a turn towards fascism or a political turn towards socialism, which is that what tends to happen with pandemics is people do crazy things. And we're already talking crazy.
Yeah.
We're already talking a little bit like fascists. Or, you know,
right.
Remember, you know, day 11. And we're already there. So we could do all sorts of stupid things. But I'm just saying, shutting down the economy for a month, 2 months, you know, which is really only shutting down about 20% of the economy. Shutting down about 20% of the economy, which is almost entirely optional retail and leisure. Absolutely. If we don't do anything stupid politically, we can absolutely come back from that and have makeup economy. We can have makeup quarters.
Last question for you, Jerry. It's probably unfair to bring this up in just the couple minutes we have left.
But what about Solomon?
No, I'm not going to ask you about Solomon. I'll get in touch with you about that offline. But Washington Post says the Dow soars more than 1,300 points for its third straight day of gains.
Yeah, because we panicked. So we're coming back to reality. I can tell you, I'm not saying this for the first time, for the past 3 weeks, Susan and I have been buying, not selling. I'm just talking personally. I'm not talking for any of the funds that I'm associated with.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking for any of my business associates. This was maybe a once in a generation buying opportunity. So remember, so go back to another black and white movie. You know, Potter's not selling, he's buying.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of you are going crazy. When they had the great panic, Potter said, only two people in this town weren't losing their heads, you, George Bailey, and me. So don't lose your head. You know, what I'm seeing is a crowd that looks like that group that's all going down to the Bailey Building and Loan
right.
to pull their money out at 20 cents on the dollar. Mobs are almost never right.
Mm.
The smart bet is usually do the opposite of what the mob is doing.
Very good, because after all, it is a wonderful life.
And worth living
yes.
for every one of them. God bless us all, everyone.
Very yeah. nice. Jerry, it's always a pleasure.
And when a man leaves, he leaves an awful big hole behind, even if he's 85
That's
years
right.
old with diabetes.
Amen. You preach that. Thank Amen. You, Jerry.
Always good, Jerry.
My
well.
Pleasure. Love you, too.
Jerry Boyer. editor of Town Hall Finance, and much more, really. Worth a follow.
Oh my gosh.
Check him out on social media. He posts regularly on Facebook. He has a presence on Twitter as well. And a very wise, astute man.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.